Thank you, David. Just grateful for this church and grateful for the way in which y'all have supported us and taken us on as missionaries. It's just a blessing to have y'all on our support team. We came down here, it was 2 years ago in the fall, and my friend, who's also one of your supported missionaries, Raleigh, who is does missionary work in Israel, him and I had put together an evangelism seminar. And we went to a couple places, went up to north, went down to Texas, but it was when the war broke out in Israel. And so he had to leave and go back. His family, they live up near the Sea of Galilee, and he had to go back, make sure his family was okay. And so I came down here and did it by myself and got to meet all of y'all. And then y'all came on our support team and just been such a blessing. It's a blessing to have churches that are supporting so we mostly, all of our support is mostly individual donors. And so we have a few churches that are supporting us. And it really is a blessing to have a church that supports missionaries. That's something that I'll tell you more about, kind of our, what we're doing now. And we planted a church in Utah. But one of the things we want to do is kind of emulate kind of the way that David has this set up. It's like, y'all just have so many missionaries that you're supporting. And we think that's such an important thing. And I just think that, unfortunately, not a lot of churches do that. And so super grateful for y'all and the way in which you are loving on missionaries. So what I thought we would do today, if you're here last night, told you a little bit about our story where we're in Utah. And I'll tell you more about that in the sermon, just about how we got there and, you know, why we're there. But Utah is the home of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And so we talked a lot about what that is yesterday and just how it's a completely different religion. A lot of people have kind of this idea that, you know, Latter-day Saints or Mormons you know, it's kind of a different denomination, but they're basically Christians. And so we talked about that last night, how that's just not the case. It's a completely different religion. So what I was going to talk about today is, well, how do we do evangelism? So we're doing evangelism on the campus where we are doing our Rosh Christi chapter. We're doing evangelism about 4 days a week. And talking about how do we have conversations with people? What are some ways that we've learned that's effective? And so I'll go over some of this stuff, some of the other stuff during the sermon. But I think this is a good question and a good way to start it out by asking, like, how do we love some people? How do we love somebody? And, you know, I think there's lots of ways that we can love people, right? I mean, we just be there for them, be their friend, care for them, help them provide their needs. But I always ask this, like, how do you love a drug addict well? Is it by giving them more drugs? No, is that loving if, you know, you have a heroin addict and just, you know, just to continue to encourage them in their drug addiction? Like, of course not, right? I mean, that's... No, they need to know that that's killing them, right? And that's not healthy for them. And so I would say, how do you love somebody that is believing false things about reality? Like, how do you love somebody that has a false view about eternal life? And I would say the way we love them is by telling them the truth. Now, we tell them the truth in love, so we're not just beating, you know, at them, you know, down with the truth. We want to share it in love, but it's unloving, I would say, for me to interact with somebody who doesn't believe in the true Jesus and not tell them about it. There's an atheist magician. His name is Penn. He has a group called Two Guys, Penn and Teller. They're in Las Vegas, and they do this magic show. Penn actually grew up as a Christian, professing Christian. And he said it was from reading the Bible that he became an atheist. On YouTube, it was about 10, 15 years ago, and you can go and watch it, but it's a pretty moving testimony where he had done his show that night, and he was telling a story about how somebody came up to him afterwards, and the kind of urban legend was actually that it was Ray Comfort. A lot of people think that it was Ray Comfort, but if you know him, he's an evangelist. But he tells a story about how, you know, this guy came up to him. He said he was very nice. He was very complimentary about the show. And he shared the gospel with them. He knew he was an atheist. Shared the gospel with them, gave him the Bible, gave him a bunch of contact information. He said he looked me in the eye. He could tell he cared. And he just was kind of reflecting on it. And he said, I've always thought that if you're a Christian and you don't share the gospel, he says, how much do you have to hate somebody not to share the gospel with them? He said, look, I'm an atheist. I don't believe it's true. But if you believe
that, you know, that you have the words of eternal life, and if you believe that sharing the gospel with somebody and introducing them to Jesus is how they can be with him forever, and you don't share that with somebody, he said, how much do you have to hate that person not to do that? He said, if I was in the street and, you know, a Mack truck was bearing down on me, he said, at some point you're going to scream at me, but at some point you're probably going to come tackle me to get me, you know, to save my life. And he said, but what you believe is infinitely more important. And yet many of us, probably most of us, are not even willing to share that good news with somebody who we believe, if what we believe is really real, will spend eternity separated from God. And so you could tell, like, it really, you know, he said, look, I'm not a, you know, he said, one nice guy sharing the gospel with it isn't going to change my position, but you could tell it meant something to him. And I would just say, in the same way, you know, we are in, so my family, we moved to Utah 5 years ago. I was telling the stats last night, Utah is less than 3% evangelical Christian. So in the way that that's kind of calculated, that's classified as an unreached people group. So state of Utah is an unreached people group. And the county that we live in is 0.5% evangelical Christian. So the county that we live in, statistically, there's more Christians in Iraq, Iran, Saudi Arabia than there are in Utah County. So it's 0.5% Christian. And I guess the question for, you know, is how much do I have to hate these people not to share the true gospel with them? But how do I do that in a way that is loving and also respects, you know, the wanting to advance the conversation? Every year at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has a general conference in the fall and the spring. So in the first weekend in October, first weekend in April, they have a general conference. And you will see, now, we have friends that go to general conference and have conversations with people. And I think we were actually going to go there this year, and I've done it. Well, we were going to go this year, but I just things happened, I couldn't go. But we had friends that went, and I think you can have good conversations. But there are some people that go there just with signs. They just want to scream at them and kind of tell them that they're going to hell. And the question is just how productive is that? Because in fact, the Latter-day Saints are taught from an early age that any kind of contention is of the devil. So if you go to a Latter-day Saint and you get into an argument with them, they're actually going to be saying, oh, this is of the devil, because this is what we've been taught our whole life. This is what they're going to do. So what we've had to learn is, how do we have conversations with Latter-day Saints in a way that is productive but also advances the conversation? Because Latter-day Saints have a different view, we talked about this last night, different view of God, different view of Jesus, different view of the gospel, different view of Scripture. It's a different religion. But we also say that they're not our enemies. Like, these are Latter-day Saints. I mean, so I always say, I hate the Mormon religion, but I love Latter-day Saints. I mean, some of the nicest people you'll ever meet they're our neighbors now. And I believe they're spiritual prisoners of war, especially if you believe, which I believe, is that it's a demonic spirit, especially where we live. I'm convinced of that. And so we love them enough to tell them the truth. But again, the question is, how do we do that? And what we focus on in our evangelism is those things I just mentioned, like the nature of truth. How do we even know something is true? The nature of God, the nature of Jesus, the reliability of the Bible, because they don't believe that you can trust the Bible fully, and then the gospel. Now, in the in our sermon, I'll talk to you a little bit about the gospel and why I think that is a helpful, how we have those conversations. But what I wanted to just kind of start off today is talking about, is kind of just give you if you go to a Latter-day Saint and you just tell them that what they believe is false, you have to understand that for Latter-day Saints, this is everything. It's not just a Sunday for them. It's a lot more like Islam. We were talking to somebody earlier. If you look at the origins of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, if you look at the origins of Islam, very similar. If you look at the way in which their life is structured, very similar. I do believe it's a demonic religion, just same thing as Islam is, as every other religion is ultimately. But you're basically telling them that everything they believe their whole life is false. All of their family members that have taught them the whole life are taught them false things. All of their, everyone they've ever known is taught them false things, especially in Utah County where we are. So the way I there was a guy named Malcolm Gladwell. If you've, you know, many of you have read some of Gladwell's stuff. I mean, you don't have to agree with him on everything. I certainly don't. But he's written a book like The Tipping Point, talk about 10,000 hours and those kind of things. He wrote a book a couple years ago called Talking to Strangers. There was a story in that book that I really thought kind of helped me think about evangelism to the Latter-day Saints. And he tells a story, and this is kind of the loose details of the story, but you'll get the gist, is that there was a guy who was working in the one of the highest levels of the American government that trained spies and taught people how to detect spies, like espionage. So they were training American spies, but also being able to detect other people, you know, whether they were spies, whatnot. And they got intel that, this was like in the 90s, they got intel that there was a spy in their organization. So there's, you know, one of the high levels of the American, you know, government that, you know, there's trained people to do spies. They got intel there's a spy in your group. And so this guy, who was supposedly the best of the best, was tasked with going and interviewing all of the people that were in the department to determine if there, you know, if there really was a spy. And he was the best in the world at, you know, figuring this out. So evidently, he goes through and interviews everybody. And from my understanding, they recorded those interviews. And his determination after interviewing everybody in the organization or everyone in their group was that there was no spy. And then, evidently, about 5-10 years later, they found out that there had been a spy the whole time. It was this lady. She was a Cuban spy. She had been drafted by Castro to infiltrate into the American government from an early age, worked her way up in the American government, and had been part of this elite espionage unit, but had been working for the Cuban government the whole time. So the guy is thinking, how did, you know, this is literally my job. I'm the best of the best. How did I miss this? And so he said, maybe I'm not as good as I think I am. Maybe I need to go back and kind of, you know, figure out some things. So evidently, he went back and watched that interview. He had taped the interview he'd done with her before. Now, with the knowledge he has, he goes and he starts that interview. And he said from the moment he started watching the interview, she's giving him all the clues that he'd been trained to pick up on that she was a spy. Like, he's watching it now with the knowledge that he has. And he said immediately he knew she was doing all of the, she was deceptive. She was doing all the things that he had been trained to pick up on to say she's lying. So then he think, so how did I miss this? It was so obvious to him now. How did I miss this, you know, all those years ago? And he said he came to the realization that he didn't want it to be true that she was a spy. Like he had done life with this lady. He had gone to her, you know, house for dinner. He knew her husband. They had, you know, had them over to their house. Their kids had gone to their other kids' birthday parties. You know, they kind of laughed together. They cried together. He didn't want it to be the case. And so all the objective evidence that was right there in the face, he looked past it. And if you think about that, it's a saint, like with Latter-day Saints, when I go to them and I'm telling them essentially everything that they've ever believed their entire life is false. And so, like, but this would be true, like, you think about, this would be true of atheists, this would be true of anybody of any other religion. You have to ask yourself, do you think they're going to be rational in that first, you know, discussion? Do you think you're just going to be able to share some evidence with them and they'll go, oh, I guess I was wrong about everything I ever believed my entire life and just walk away? You know, are they going to be objective? Are they going to be willing to kind of look at that evidence? Do you think it'll happen in one conversation? Do you think that your demeanor matters? Like the way in which I'm talking to them, don't you think that matters? Like if I'm showing them, look, I love you. And I love you enough to tell you the truth, like we talked about. So I always kind of joke and say, like when we're talking to our students, I'll say, what if someone knocked on your door tomorrow and you open the door and they just said, your mom is a Cuban spy. You know, I jokingly say for some of the students, they go, oh, that makes so much sense now. Like, okay, no, that really makes a lot of sense. But they're like, I guess my mom's a Cuban spy, just turn her in. You know, like, would you be open to the evidence? Would you probably be dismissive of them? Like all of those things that are just, it's going to take longer for you to think through these things. Are you going to be completely rational? Right, of course not. And so we have to think about this when we're talking to people of other religions. And so the stats actually say that for a Latter-day Saint, from the moment they start having doubts till if they do walk away from Mormonism, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, it would take about 7 years. And so what happens is people try to have one conversation with somebody. It doesn't maybe go that well. And they're like, well, I guess I don't have the gift of evangelism, or, you know, they just give up. But that's just not the way that it works. Like, you know, if you think about it, what we always say is if it's about 7 years, let's just say kind of that's 100 conversations with an evangelical. So, you know, the first maybe 10, 20 conversations, they're not going to be super productive. Maybe it's just having somebody that you can, you know, be friends with, like letting them know that you care about them. And so we always say, if you're the third conversation, right, have the best third conversation you can have, which may not be super productive, but you've got to have the good third conversation to want to have the fourth and the fifth. And then maybe, you know, you get a chance to have the 100th conversation where you get to lead them across the finish line and they become, you know, they become a believer. But we don't know that's going to be the case. So what we like, you know, one of the things that we do when we have conversations with people is we just think the book Tactics by Greg Kochel is super helpful, super important. And so I was going to just take just a few minutes and just kind of share with you a little bit about how we have conversations with people that, you know, are Latter-day Saints or now statistically 70% of those who walk away from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints will go atheist agnostic. So I actually have a lot of conversations with atheists on the college on the campus at Utah Valley University, which is where our Rosh Christie chapter is. But they're former Latter-day Saints, so it's very skewed atheism because all of their understanding of religion is mostly Latter-day Saint. So what we're trying to do is both share with them, you know, arguments for God's existence and share with them why we think God exists, but also undo a lot of the bad theology that they've sort of imbibed from growing up Latter-day Saint. But with Tactics, so I just encourage you, this will just kind of be a, you know, brief overview, but with Greg Kochel's Tactics, you know, basically his argument is this, learn to ask questions in your evangelism. A lot of times when we do evangelism, we think that we just need to dump information on people. And what we found is that most of the time, when you're just dumping information on people, like if you're in a conversation with somebody and they talk for 20 minutes and they don't talk, you know, they don't let you chime in, like many, probably like some of you right now, you're like, you're already tuned me out, you know, you're thinking about something else. It's just the conversation, usually you've kind of tuned them out. But if you're doing the talking, right, if someone's asking you questions, you'll find the conversation interesting. In fact, you know, the Kochel says interested. If I'm interested in what you're in, you know, who you are and what you have to say, that's interesting. Like if I talk to you for a while and ask you a bunch of questions about yourself and you do a lot of the talking, you'll walk away going, oh, that was a good conversation because you got to talk about your favorite topic usually, which is what? Yourself. So your goal is to try to get out of this mode of I have to be the answer man with all the information. That's another reason. The number one reason usually students will say they don't evangelize is because what if they ask me a question I don't know the answer to? So we'll tell them two things. One, can you say, I don't know? Everyone, I don't know? Okay, great. Now you can evangelize. You know, if someone asks you a question, that's a great question. I don't know. Do you mind if I kind of research that and then can we meet again next week and I'll give you the answer? Number one, it shows them, you know, you don't have to have all the answers. But number two, it shows the person I'm talking to, this isn't a game. I'm not just trying to win an argument. I genuinely care for their soul, and I want to take their questions seriously. So if they have questions, I want to honor their questions by answering it. I mean, you know, one of our taglines at Rosh Christie is ask good questions and seek good answers. So if they're asking questions, we want to honor them. Doesn't mean I have to have all the answers, but we believe biblical Christianity does. So whatever question they have, we want to encourage them to ask those questions. And then maybe I get some answers, those questions, and we meet again. Now they ask me some other questions. Great. I don't know the answers to that. Can we meet again next week? So now I'm meeting with them. We're building a relationship. And I'm also getting an education the whole time. I'm learning. I'll learn the things that they're asking the questions for. So next time I'm talking to somebody, I'll have answers to those questions. So it's an easy way for us to start conversations. It's an easy way for us to get into conversations. And the goal in every conversation, and this is where I think sometimes even Christians will get upset if I say this, the goal is not necessarily to get to the foot of the cross in every conversation. The goal is just to get up to bat. The goal is just to start a conversation. And a lot of people, they put so much pressure on themselves. Well, I'm going to have to, if I want to have evangelism conversation, I have to know all the answers and I have to, you know, get to the foot of the cross in every conversation. If we say, not only do you not have to have all the answers, but all your goal is just to start a conversation, see, that lowers the bar, the pressure for us, and just makes it so much easier for us to start conversations. Yes, eventually I'd love to get to the foot of the cross. And if it happens in a conversation, awesome. Yes, I'd love to share the gospel. But I'm not putting the pressure on myself that I have to do that. If it doesn't, if it comes up, awesome. And if it doesn't, then I'm hoping that I'm going to build a relationship for continued conversations or waiting for the next person waiting for the next person to have the conversation. So we ask lots of questions, and with in the book, maybe this audience hopefully will know the reference. You have Columbo, right? A lot of the students now, because Columbo's now on Netflix, so a lot of the students now are like watching all these old shows. But he calls it the Columbo tactic. So Columbo, you know, this kind of bumbling detective who, you know, kind of comes on the, was it Peter Falk, right? Comes in the crime scene, doesn't really know what's going on, seemingly doesn't know what's going on, doesn't have a pencil, but he always like, he'll say something about this bothers me, and he'll ask a question, and ask another question, and then he'll solve the case. So what you're doing is he calls it the Columbo tactic, is you're actually going on the offensive, but in an inoffensive way. So I'm challenging them, but I'm doing it by asking questions. And actually, so from my legal background, David said I was a lawyer for a while before God got a hold of me. My grandfather used to jokingly and say that you can't, you know, I was a lawyer, then I became a Christian, you know, because he would always tell me terrible lawyer jokes. But I learned part of like when you're cross-examining somebody, right, you're always asking them, you're asking questions. But what you're doing in a cross-examination is you're leading them where you want to go, but through questions. So if you learn this skill, and it is a skill, it takes effort, you practice it a bunch of times, we've probably had thousands of conversations over the years, you get better at it. So now I can actually lead somebody where I want them to go, but I'm doing it through questions, not by preaching at them. So now they're doing the talking, what are they having to do? They're having to do the thinking. And the goal is, like, if I'm just telling them that what they believe is false, they're probably not going to listen to me. But if I'm asking them questions, and now they have to think about what they believe, the goal is, as Kokel says, you want to put a metaphorical stone in their shoe, a rock in their shoe, right? You get a rock in your shoe, you're kind of like, it just irritates you, right? So you want them to say, in their mind, you want them to start questioning their worldview. Because if their worldview is not true, which we would say any worldview that disagrees with biblical Christianity is false, it's going to have areas, lots of them, where that doesn't correspond to reality. And our job is to find that area and kind of put our finger in it a little bit and let them kind of feel it. Now, most likely, they're not going to just in the middle of that conversation just change their mind and say, oh, you're right. But what we want is when they get home that night, when they're thinking about what the conversation, it was a good conversation, they want to have another one, and they're lying their head on their pillow to say, I don't know if my worldview can account for that. I don't know if that can, you know, you start having the doubts. And then what we see is students will come back to us and they'll say, we talked about this last week. Can we talk more, right? They're interested in these kinds of questions. The other thing is, people will read a book on Mormonism and they'll say they'll want to come to Utah and evangelize the Mormons. And they'll, I'll talk about this, I guess, maybe in the sermon, but Mormonism is kind of the rubric for every group that believes that Joseph Smith was a true prophet and that he received the restored gospel. But there's about 200 different sects of Mormonism, most of the polygamous sects, and then the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is the main one that y'all probably know. So the current prophet says of the Latter-day Saints says, don't call us Mormons anymore. So they want to be called members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints because they're trying to position themselves as Christian just like us. There's a different denomination. So if I use the term Mormon with the Latter-day Saints, sometimes they'll get offended. So I'll use Mormon and LDS interchangeably, but just know that if you do have a conversation with them. They'll come to UVU with us, and they'll say, well, you guys believe this, and you guys believe this, and you believe this. And the person they're talking to says, I don't believe that. And they'll say, yes, you do. They'll go, I don't believe that. They go, yes, you do. You believe this. Now, number one, why are you telling somebody what they believe? They're telling you they don't believe it. But what you'll find is that you have like textbook understandings that, let's say, of Mormonism, but this would be true of any religion, this is their doctrine. But then when you talk to someone on the street, you'll find that they don't all believe that same thing. So if I'm talking to you, like if I'm talking to David, I don't want to say, okay, I know, you know, some of your background, I know some of your theology, I know everything you believe. No, I want to ask him, what do you believe? Right? Because he might not believe everything that's kind of under that rubric. And so I want to get an education, and then I want to have a conversation with him. So the questions are really important because usually we're talking past each other in these conversations. So I'm actually asking them, you tell me what you believe. And now let's actually have a real conversation. Now, just briefly, what are the questions that you can, if you just learn these questions, it'll change the way you have, it'll change the way you have any conversation. So it's not just evangelism. This would be political discussions. Like we have, you know, we kind of jokingly say at our Rosh Christie chapter, the two things you're not allowed to talk about on the college campuses anymore are politics and religion. It's like, what if we had a club where that's all we talked about? We disagreed on everything, but we still were able to get pizza and be friends. So what we, you know, I taught on abortion in January, and you know we had a sign. So when we do evangelism in the hallway, Utah Valley University, 45,000 college students, we'll have a sign up, you know, with different questions on it just based on the topic that week, and we're just trying to engage students as they walk by. And the sign just said, "Can we even talk about abortion?" You know, it's funny because like a lot of people were like, "No, you know, we can't even have. Can we even have a conversation about it?" And it was actually really amazing because we ended up talking because there was a girl who was in a booth two down from us, and she was actually it was a pro-choice organization that was bringing a pro-choice film on campus, and she saw the way we interacted with people. She saw the way that there was one person that was kind of that got pretty angry at us, but we didn't get angry back at them. We prayed for people. We had good conversations. We asked them questions. She saw that. She kind of watched us for 2 hours. And when we kind of shut everything down and we went to the cafeteria for eating lunch and we're kind of just debriefing, and she walked by our table and she said, "I really want to say that you guys did an amazing job of having that conversation. I was watching you." Like, we weren't aware that she was watching us. She goes, "You guys had really good conversations. Can I ask you a question?" Like, absolutely. And then she proceeded to sit down and we talked about abortion for 45 minutes. We shared with her why we believe the pro-life position, answered her question, asked her questions about her view, and afterwards she said, "This was a really good conversation. You gave me things to think about. I really appreciated the ways you went about it." And all we did was we asked questions, you know, we treated her with respect, but she now has some information to think about, and you know, our prayers, hopefully she would become pro-life. But when we don't talk to each other, you know, think about, politically, we don't talk anymore. We just yell at each other, right? But evangelism and politics, even in in-house theological discussions. Like, think about, we don't talk, we just agree to disagree on these things. We don't even have conversations about our theological positions. If we use tactics, we would, you know, at our church that we planted, I mean, again, one of our things is ask good questions, seek good answers. We have a whole theological and apologetics discussion board where our whole thing is no question is off limits. But if we ask questions in that, then it's a way to have these conversations without attacking each other. So I think it's just the most helpful thing that I've learned about how to have these conversations. And basically, you can learn all of that you need to know from tactics. I mean, I encourage you to get the book. Is just learn two questions. The first is you have to ask people what they mean by that. So the first the tactical question is, what do you mean by that? And the reason is that almost assuredly you're talking past each other. I mean, think about in theological discussions. If I mention some theological term and I ask you if you hold to that position, probably we're talking past each other. Because I know what I mean when I say it. If I said, you know, if I just say Calvinism, all right, I know what I say when I mean that. I know what other, but I don't know what you mean when you use that term, and we're probably talking past each other, right? Or, you know, pick any term you want. So asking what do you mean by that is super important. Now, with Latter-day Saints, it's super important, because what we like to say is with Latter-day Saints, we're using the same lexicon, but a very different dictionary. In other words, every single word that we use, like here's just an example. Every one of these words, Latter-day Saints use the same, and they mean something completely different. So just as an example, they believe in the Trinity. If you tell them they don't believe in the Trinity, they go, "No, we believe in the Trinity." You go, "Wait a minute. No, you don't." They go, "Yes, we do." If I ask them, "What do you mean when you use the word Trinity?" We'll find out that they believe that the Heavenly Father, Jesus, and the Holy Ghost are three separate beings, three separate gods that are united in one purpose. Now, hopefully that's very different than what you believe when you believe the Trinity, right? One being, one substance, but three person. There's only one God, and that one God is three person. So we're using the same term, but we mean very different things. And what happens is a lot of Christians and Latter-day Saints talk past each other. They're using the same terms, but we're actually talking past each other. And they think, well, they basically the same thing. But when you ask them, what do you mean by that? You find out, oh, we believe completely different things. So think about that. I mean, like in every political discussion and every theological discussion, evangelism discussion, what do you mean by that? When you use this word, what do you mean? If you can just get in the habit of doing that, I promise you it'll change your conversations. So what do you mean by that? And then the second question we always ask people is, how did you come to that conclusion? What happens is, so for instance, the eighth article of faith for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, it's in their Pearl of Great Price, is we believe the Bible as far as it's been translated correctly. Now, what most of the Latter-day Saints mean when they, there's different views. Again, what do you mean by that when you say that? Because there's depending on who you're talking to, they have different views. But most of them will say, it's like, we believe the Bible has been mistranslated. What they mean is transmitted. It's like the telephone game where someone, you know, says, like, if, I mean, this is my daughter Isabel. If, you know, if I whisper something to her and it kind of goes all the way around the room, and then, you know, get to David and now it's something completely different, right? They'll say the Bible was, the translation of the Bible was kind of like that. Now, if you studied that, you know that's not true. We actually can demonstrably show that's not true. So you have two options. They tell you it's been mistranslated, and you can say that's not true, and now you just vomit over them, you know, with all your information for 30 minutes, you know, tell them all of your textual transmission evidence. They probably tuned you out. They don't really care what you're saying. Or you say, that's interesting. How did you come to that conclusion? Like, have you studied textual transmission? I'm interested. If you have evidence that shows me that I can't trust the Bible, I want to know that. And what you're going to find with most people, so what happens is they've made the claim, they bear the burden of proof, right? It's like as a lawyer, when I was a criminal defense attorney for a couple years, and don't recommend that as a profession, but when the state would charge my client with a crime, they had the burden of proof. Now, the defense attorney can just, I mean, the defense can do nothing, right? They have to prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt. What the state doesn't have to prove that you know, I don't have to prove that my client was innocent. The state has to prove him guilty. In a similar way, when someone makes the claim, they have the burden of proof. And what happens is when we take the burden on ourselves, we try to refute what they say, but we don't have that burden. So someone says, well, the Bible was mistranslated. I go, oh, that's interesting. How'd you come to that conclusion? And usually what you'll get is kind of a deer in the headlights because they've never been asked that question. They're like, I don't know. That's what I've been taught. Well, why do you believe that it's been mistranslated? Well, it's kind of like a telephone game. Why do you think that's how the textual transmission works? Like, how do you think that happened? And now I'm asking them questions. And then the third tactic, if you're, you know, would be, have you considered? That's another, you can get there if you want. Have you considered? And then I could actually give them some evidence. But I've asked them some questions. I've demonstrated. Now they're probably realizing, oh, I don't really know what I believe. I don't know why I believe it. And now I could ask them the third tactical question, well, have you considered? And then I'm still phrasing it as a question, but now I'm sharing some evidence with them. So think about that. Like, you know, what do you mean by that? How'd you come to that conclusion? And then have you considered? If you could just learn those tactical questions, you can have conversations with people about any topic. And guess what I'm not having to do? All the work. Right? I'm just asking questions. I'm relaxed. I don't have to have all the answers. They're the ones that are making the, I'm just asking them questions. And so, in Francis Schaeffer said, if he's talking to somebody in an evangelistic conversation for an hour, he would say, I would ask them questions and pray for like 55 minutes. And then I have about 5 minutes at the end to maybe like tell them, you know, what I thought. And the idea is if I'm asking them questions and they're enjoying the conversation, then when I say, well, could I tell you what I believe on this issue? Or could I tell, has anybody ever shared the biblical gospel with you? And I could, you know, I could ask, they'll, if I've been asking them questions and we've had a good conversation, they'll say, sure. And then I get to share the gospel with them. And I would say with anybody of a different religion, the most important thing that we can ever do is share the gospel with them. And so if I've asked them questions and I've built that rapport, at the end of the conversation, I'll usually, especially with the Latter-day Saint friends, I'll say, can I share the gospel with you? And then I'll always ask them if I can pray with them. Praying with a Latter-day Saint is potentially the best apologetic you can ever have. Because we've had situations, because number one, they're praying to, I mean, a false deity. They're praying to a demon, right? And we're praying to our Father. And so we've had situations where we've asked Latter-day Saints, I don't want them praying for me, right? I'm asking if I can pray for them. And we're praying and we're just talking to our Father. And, you know, and then when we get done, we look up and this happened. We were at this girl's house and she's just weeping. And she's like, what? She's just literally, she was like, what was that? I was like, that's prayer. We're talking to our Father. And this is what we've been telling you is you don't have that relationship with God because you're believing in this false gospel. And then we got a chance to kind of revisit that conversation. And she was interested more in what we had to say. We got a chance to share with her more. So I think prayer is an incredible, apologetic. So, and then we always are, after every conversation, you know, if we're, I'm doing it with a partner, you know, whatever, it's always, how can we do better? You know, what could I learn from this conversation? What are some things I need to, you know, think better about? You know, people ask me questions. I don't know. That's a good thing. That's a good question. I never thought about that. That's fine. Now I know what my homework is, right? So I'm always trying to get better. I'm always trying to have better conversations by thinking about the conversation. How did it go? And what could I do better? Knowing that, let's say you know some tactics, you've thought about kind of your, you know, understanding of, okay, I want to be gentle in these conversations. I just think this is, maybe this is, and this is the last thing we'll talk about, is what we try to do, now again, this is not perfect science at all, but what we're trying to find out where somebody is on the spectrum of non-belief, and then wherever they are, trying to figure out what would be good questions, what would be good conversations to have with that person. And so this is a book, it's called I Once Was Lost, by two guys who were with InterVarsity, which is a college ministry, on college campuses for decades. And they said, over the 30 years they were in ministry, they said, this is kind of what we discovered were the thresholds that people went through of their journey from either atheism or, you know, just kind of secularism to walking with Jesus. And they said there were kind of these five thresholds. The first was they moved from distrust to trust. In other words, they found a Christian they could trust. Most, and you think about this now, we're so divided politically, most non-Christians do not trust Christians. They think that we're like, you know, some evil people. They're just, you know, whatever, you know, we're this far, vast right-wing conspiracy. We're trying to destroy the country, whatever. So they had a Christian they just befriended and they trusted. And so when we're at UVU now, Utah Valley University, we've got all these Latter-day Saints that have never had Christian friends before, and they'll tell us, they go, you're our evangelical friend. Like, you're the one that we can ask questions to because we just built a relationship with them. And like, they just finally have somebody that they can trust that is an evangelical. When we talk to Latter-day Saints, and we'll ask kind of, we're just, you know, first meeting them, we'll ask them if they've been on a mission, right? Latter-day Saints go on these, guys go on 2-year missions, girls go on 18-month missions. And we'll ask them, have you been on a mission? And if they say yes, and they were in the South, almost assuredly, their interactions with evangelicals was terrible. Almost assuredly. I mean, it's sad. We'll ask them, did you ever meet an evangelical? Yes. How was that? It was terrible. Because they would, you know, this one guy, he told me a story. He said, I was on my mission. I knocked on this one guy's door. He was a Christian evangelical. He kind of, on the porch, he didn't invite me into his house. He stood there. He basically told me I was going to hell. Joseph Smith was a false prophet. Kind of just kind of berated me for 5 minutes. And then said he was going to pray for me and then kind of sent me on my way. And he said, I went next door and this guy, came to the door. He was Muslim. He invited me into his house. He gave me a drink of, you know, lemonade. He asked me how I was doing. He just let me it was kind of hot. He let me like cool off. He asked me about myself. He said, if I was going to walk away from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, he was like, which one do you think I would go to? Now, that doesn't make it true. Right? Truth is what corresponds to reality. But it just means that if they've never had a loving interaction with us and they've never heard the true gospel, how will they know if they haven't heard? Right? And how will they hear unless somebody tells them? And so many of us, we just need to start building relationships with non-believers. Like I'll say, like one of the things we've got to start doing is just finding ways to just build relationships with non-believers. And for us in Utah, it's kind of easy because there are no Christians, you know, but maybe here, like I don't, you know, it's, you find people that you have similar interests with that are non-believers, but just build relationships. And maybe that's just the first phase, like where you just, they learn to trust you. The second phase where they've moved from sort of curious, now you've built a relationship with them and now they're curious about Jesus. And they're not necessarily interested necessarily in converting, but they're curious about it. And then the third level was they moved from closed to change to open change. They said this was the hardest level for anybody to go through. Now think about this. This is hard, like in your theological positions and your political positions, that we don't want to change. And the hardest thing for them was being open to change. And this is true of our Latter-day Saint friends. This is the hardest barrier to cross. Then level four, they went from meandering to seeking. In other words, they became actively seeking God, and then they ultimately came into a saving relationship with Jesus. So this is helpful because you can think, okay, if you think about any of your non-believing friends or relatives, you can kind of think, okay, where do they fit on this scale? And then now my goal is not necessarily to try to move them all the way from 1 to 5. It's just to try to take them to the next level. Like, maybe I could just, so now I'm like, my conversations can be structured about, I just want to help them, you know, start being curious about Jesus, or be open to change, or, you know, full, you know, really I can, you know, with a level 4 person, I can challenge them more. But if you try to have a level 4 conversation with a level 1 person, it usually goes terrible. And that's what we sometimes we try to do. We just kind of, you know, especially as an apologist, try to give them a bunch of information, but maybe they're not ready. Maybe they don't even trust me. And so I just need to work on level 1. And so I'm asking, when I'm asking them questions, using my tactics, I'm trying to figure out where they are. And I think this is a super, super helpful technique. Now, what we've done, maybe what you're going to have to do, I think we talked about this a couple years ago when we were here, is you're going to have to contextualize this for your context. You know, in New Mexico, it's going to look different than Utah. What we've done, a former pastor of mine, what he did is he took that concept and he contextualized it for us with our Latter-day Saint friends. And so I'll just show you this real quick. And you think about, okay, what kinds of conversations would be appropriate for people on these different stages? And what you'll notice about this is you'll notice, number one, is you'll notice that the descriptions change, and you'll see this within Latter-day Saint friends. And then you'll also notice that the information is kind of going one way at first, and it's going the other way afterwards. So a level 1 Latter-day Saint says, I'm a Mormon, you're an evangelical, what you have is false, I have the full and true gospel. This is probably 95% of the Mormon missionaries that come to your door. Like, so you see, I'm a Mormon, you're an evangelical. They recognize, you know, I'm right, you're wrong, two different religions, okay? A level 2, I'm a Mormon / Christian, notice the change there, and you're an evangelical / Christian. We basically believe the same things and we can learn from each other. What we're finding now is that 90% of the young people we talk to are level 2s. 90% of the young people we talk to basically consider themselves Christians. We're Christian, you're Christian, let's talk with each other, right? Number 3, I'm a Mormon / Christian, you're an evangelical / Christian. I like learning the Bible from you. You guys study the Bible. They like the fact that we study the Bible more than the Latter-day Saints. I want to learn the Bible from you. Now notice now the information is now going from us to them. Level 4, back to I'm a Mormon, you're a Christian. I realize we don't believe the same thing about anything that matters, and I want to learn more. Level 5, I'm counting the cost. You know, for Latter-day Saints, things are changing a lot, but historically, if someone left the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, they were an apostate, and their family was to disown them, they would have nothing to do with them. That's changing now, depending on your family, but I was telling the group last night, there was a young lady at our church who was going to BYU, like the church that, Utah County, where Utah Valley University, then like 3 miles from us is BYU, Brigham Young University, 35,000 students. It's the flagship university for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. She was going to BYU. She met some Christians, shared the gospel with her. She started coming to our church. She became convinced that the biblical gospel was true, and she left Mormonism. She actually got baptized, you know, as a believer. So she tells her bishop at BYU that I no longer believe this is true. Now, they call it bishop roulette because some bishops are going to be some bishops will let students stay. Some bishops are going to be hardcore. It kind of just depends on your bishop. This bishop said, you've got 2 weeks to change your mind or you're out. You have to leave BYU. You're going to get kicked out of BYU. Because when they go in with an ecclesiastical endorsement, and they basically agree that if we stop believing this, then we'll leave. So you can go in as a Christian, but you just are going in understanding that you're not a Latter-day Saint. They also get a huge discount being a Latter-day Saint. It's a super cheap for them to go to BYU. But anyway, so the school kicked her out. Her parents told her that she was going to be cut off completely. In fact, they uninvited her to Thanksgiving dinner. But she said, you know, she was counting the cost. You know, she was realizing this was the consequences of false religion. And she said, but where am I going to go? Y'all, you know, Jesus has the words of eternal life. And so she stayed. So level 5 for us is trying to help them count the cost. There was a kid who we were convinced was a believer. You know, maybe he is. And he was actually about to be baptized in our church. And it was all of a sudden he just ghosted everybody. He wouldn't return anybody's phone calls. He's back on social media. This was about a year and a half ago. Back on social media posting about pro Latter-day Saint stuff. And I think he just counted the costs and he couldn't stand losing his family. And so he chose, you know, a false religion. And then level 6 would be they've actually come, you know, across the finish line, so to speak. So For us, the question is, and we can just look at this briefly, what would be some good questions for each of these people? Now, if you think about it, like a level one person, most of the missionaries you come through that come to your door, they're not interested in all of our apologetic arguments, if you think about it. But they have what's right, what you have is false. When they go through the missionary training center before they become a missionary, they're actually taught all the apologetic arguments that we're, you know, that evangelicals use. They're taught that those are from Satan. And so if anybody comes to you and they start talking to you about the Trinity and about different Jesus, know that that's actually from Satan. So when I come and I start telling them that, they're like, oh, this is exactly what, if I get angry with them, this is exactly what they taught me would happen. So with a level one person, I'm not trying to have my apologetic arguments with them, with missionaries. I'm trying to invite them into my house. Some people don't like doing that. We invite them into our house. We share a meal with them. I'll tell them, we'll give you rides. We just want to, again, we want to have I want them to have an evangelical they can be friends with, that they can know, that they can start asking, be comfortable with and ask questions. But then I'm just asking them questions. We were talking about this last night. How do you know what you believe is true? Hypothetically, if, by whatever standard you require, if you became convinced that the teachings of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints were false, would you walk away? Yeah, you know, I just like, how do you know that what you believe is true? They're taught essentially that from the Book of Mormon that they pray about it and that God will give them a burning in their bosom, in their spirit will reveal to them it's true. So they have this internal subjective experience that's what determines reality for them. And I'll ask them, have your feelings ever lied to you before? You know, have you ever been convinced that, you know, like to the guys, you know, have you ever been convinced that some girl was going to be, you know, your wife? And then you turned out, you break up with her like 2 weeks later, right? Your feelings have lied to you. You know, the heart is, you know, is wicked, deceitful among all things. Who can trust it? So just let's think, well, that's not how we ultimately determine reality. So I'm just kind of planting seeds. You know, if you decided that Joseph Smith wasn't who he claimed to be, does that mean Jesus isn't who he claimed to be? I want them to see that if they reject Joseph Smith in the Book of Mormon, that doesn't mean Jesus isn't who he claimed to be. Those are two separate claims. Because again, 70% of those who leave the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints will go atheist agnostic. So we want to show them not just that it's not true, but that biblical Christianity is true. So I'm just planting those seeds with a level one person. A level two person, we believe the same thing. What do you think would be appropriate with that person? My only goal with them is to convince them that we don't believe the same thing. So I remember we had a conversation, this was a couple weeks ago, a guy walked up to our table at UVU, we basically believe the same thing, we talked for 20 minutes, and afterwards he goes, oh, I guess we don't believe the same thing. I was like, yeah. And then I said, that means one of us is in big trouble, because we believe different gospels. And we'll talk about that in the, you know, that's, you know, Galatians 1. So I'm just trying to have, you know, I'm just showing them we don't believe the same thing. A level three person, if someone says, I like learning the Bible from you, what should we do with them? Study the Bible with them. That's right. So we, you know, when we were moving to Utah, we were getting people were like, well, what are the best books to read? And we got all kinds of good apologetics books. But I remember this one pastor. He said, just read Galatians over and over and over and over and over again, because like Galatians is essentially written to, you know, legalists. Is it written to Mormons? It was always written to them. So we just try to. Can we do a Bible study with you? Can we just go through Galatians with you? Because it just lays it out so, you know, beautifully. And then a level four person, that's where all the apologetics arguments are helpful. So think about a level four person, that's where, like, we can show them all our evidence that we can trust the Bible. We can show them that Joseph Smith was not a true prophet, that, you know, that the Book of Mormon, there's no archaeological evidence. Like, we can talk about all those things because they're ready for that conversation. And then a level five person, we're helping them count the cost. We want to be the community for them. We're having to recognize that if someone is, you know, are we going to house those people or help them live, you know, live with us? Or when they get kicked out of their family, are we willing to kind of be an Acts 2 community for them? And then obviously, you know, we want to see Latter-day Saints come to saving faith. And so, you know, for your community, maybe that looks a little different, but you're trying to figure out what are questions that are appropriate as you kind of look at the stages that people are in for your community. We call that exegeting our community. And that's where, you know, what y'all will have to do here in Albuquerque, because it's going to look a lot different than what we are doing up in Utah. But this is kind of how we have learned to have these conversations with our Latter-day Saint friends. I'll show you this. This is just I showed this to the group last night. Well, actually, no, I'll show this. I'll show you the sermon. But I'll show you just the difference between their gospel and our gospel. And it really is heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking to see people that are trying so hard to prove themselves worthy to a false God. And we have the words of eternal life. And so I think, like what Penn says, how much do we have to hate somebody not to share that news with them? And I think that that's one of the reasons why we've committed our lives to being in Utah and to sharing the gospel with our Latter-day Saint friends, and for those who have walked away from that religion but thinking that they've left biblical Christianity, when we'll tell them, you haven't even hit the tip of the iceberg of biblical Christianity. You know, what if you actually could meet the real biblical Jesus? And it's amazing to see people that go from Mormonism to biblical Christianity. Like, it's, you know, it's the weight that's lifted off of them. And to see they're some of the best evangelists you'll ever meet are people who have been through that, come out on the other side, and now understand the true gospel versus the false gospel that they were taught. And so, you know, our prayer and our would be that we'd see revival. We jokingly said, you know, in Utah, there's never this, that area, the Wasatch Front, there's never been a Christian revival ever, you know, in that area. So we jokingly say, we're not praying for revival there. We're praying for vival, because there's never been one in the first place. And so we're going to make t-shirts say vival is coming. And then, you know, and people can ask us questions about that. And, you know, we can tell them what we mean by that. So, I know we've got like maybe one or two minutes. Is there any questions about any things we talked about? Any questions about any of the, you know, evangelism stuff or anything about, yes. Oh, yeah, 100%. And so for that, actually, I'll talk about that in the sermon. I think for that, the question is, are you a good person? You know, like from the biblical test, is anybody a good person? You know, the answer is no, you know. So it's either we're perfect, we keep the law perfectly, or, you know, we have Jesus who kept the law perfectly for us. And what all legalists do is they say, you know, we try our best. But that was never the standard. The standard is never try your best. The standard is perfection, and none of us meet that. So I think legalists need the law. I think that we talked about this last night. There are kind of two within those communities. I think there's some people who think they're keeping the law perfectly. They need the law to know that it's, you know, that they're failing. And then into that we have the true gospel. But there's the other side, is those that are realizing they're not keeping the law perfectly, and they're just desperate. And they're brokenhearted, and they are like, I'm never going to be good enough. And into that, we get to share the reality that Jesus paid it all. You know, Jesus actually did accomplish for them, like, their righteousness. We love 2 Corinthians 5:21. We'll talk about that in the sermon. That's one of our, I'm going to get that tattooed on my neck, like right here, right next to make good decisions. That we have the righteousness of Jesus, not because of our works. And I think that's everything. So I think that the legalist has to have their works because they're holding on to that. And that's a hard thing to let go of. That's why I think the religious people can be the hardest people to witness to, because they're holding on to their religious works. I mean, that's what Jesus had a hard time, you know, witnessing to the Pharisees, because their identity is in their religious works. And so we're trying to help them. We just have to help them to see, and I think through questions, that their religious works will never be good enough. You know, you either are perfect or you're not. You don't become perfect, you know. And so we've got this sin debt that we can't make up even through all of our religious works. But I do think Catholicism and Mormonism are very similar. In fact, there's a lot of similarities. There's a lot of similarities in Islam. There's a lot of similarities in all those, those works-based religious systems that say you just keep doing, you know, and maybe you'll be good enough, you know, eventually. It's heartbreaking, especially when we have the true gospel. Yeah. Any other questions or comments? Yes. That's right. Yep. Yeah. So that's what they're taught. If Mormonism isn't true, nothing is true, which literally makes no sense, right? Because then you're saying it's true that nothing is true. So that's why most will go atheist, agnostic, and they've also. I believe it's demonic. Is they believe that they've experienced biblical Christianity and they've rejected it because it's all tied up into that. And so it's so hard for them to see Yes, you've rejected Joseph. Yes, you've rejected the Book of Mormon, rightly, but that doesn't mean that Jesus wasn't who he claimed to be. That doesn't mean that biblical Christianity isn't true, because in their minds, they're intertwined. So we have to help them to see that we agree that you've made the right decision. That's not true, but that doesn't mean that this. You have to look at this evidence on its own and separate. But they've been taught their whole life that they're intertwined, and so it's so hard for them to break free of that. I mean, it really is like brainwashing in many ways, from an early age. So there's a growing number of people that we talk to they don't believe it's true, but for them, it's like, well, it works. It gives me good family structure. I'm convinced that most of the Latter-day Saint higher-ups, they know it's not true, but for them, they look at religion as just like it's pragmatic. Like, it helps us. Like, we have good families. We have good, good values. So what's the harm if it's not true? Think about that, how demonic that is. Like, the harm is you're believing a false God and you're separated from God for eternity. So I think a lot of them look at religion very pragmatically, not as what is true, but does it work? And for them, they're like, yeah, it kind of works. It's given us what we wanted. And so we don't really think about, is it true? They don't even really ask those kind of questions. They're not taught to think. Now, there's plenty that do, but most of the, Latter-day Saints in the pews, they don't think about these things. The things we talked about, they don't think about, is it true? They just kind of blindly obey and believe, because that's what they're taught from an early age. I mentioned this last night, that one of their sayings is, when the prophet has spoken on anything, all the thinking has been done, your job is just to believe. So, I think that was a sermon you gave, like, last week, right? No, it's like, yeah, anybody that says that, run from that group, right? Like, no, like, ask questions, right? Right. We can ask we never stop asking questions, because we believe that the Bible is true and it can withstand all your questions. So, yes?
But don't all the statistics on social pathology put the lie to that claim that it works?
Well, so then the question is, so I'll ask him is, what do you mean by it works? Because, I'll mention this in the sermon, but the county we live in, highest level per capita of depression medicine prescriptions, anxiety prescription, teenage suicide, bankruptcies, porn use, plastic surgeries. So it's all this outward veneer.
What about divorce?
Divorce is becoming more prominent now. It was not, but now it's becoming more prominent in the Latter-day Saint Church. So you're just seeing this, the reality of it's not working. Because it's a false gospel. I mean, in all false, it's going to put this performance orientation on everybody, and they're trying to earn and earn and earn and earn, which is going, so it's going to, we know how it's going to end up, right? And it's exactly, those things are bearing out. But outwardly, it looks really pretty, and that's what's hard, for them to see. So I know we're out of time, 10:15. Do you want me to pray for us, and then we'll close? Father, we thank you for the true gospel. Lord, every time we think about, I think about Latter-day Saints, and I think about the reality that so many of these men and women and kids are trying to earn your love and trying to, on this performance scale and treadmill, and just how unattainable that is. And then I think about the true gospel and the reality that, that you love us because you love us because you love us. The reality that if we trusted in you, Jesus, that we're clothed in your righteousness and our identity is secure. We're adopted into your family, Father. That is good news. And so I just pray that the reality of the gospel will penetrate our hearts, help us to see how amazing and how good it is, that it's not just information, that this is reality, this is living water, and that we would have the courage and the love, really, to go and share this good news with those that are, that are literally dying in the desert from thirst, that we have living water to share with them, Lord. And so we thank you for this morning. Thank you for the opportunity just to think through these things, Lord. And we love you. We praise in Jesus' name. Amen.